Lissa DeHart was someone I met during my great Clubhouse sprint of 2021. As soon as I heard her speak, I knew she was someone I had to get to know better. Eventually, we took our conversations off of Clubhouse and onto Zoom, because we are not local to each other. I've been meaning to have her on the podcast for a while, but I'm grateful we waited. Lissa is definitely a critically conscious coach, and I hope everyone has a chance to work with someone like her. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Critically Conscious Coach, where coaches and consultants know the importance of deeply connecting with prospects, showing up in an authentic and joyful way, and inviting those people to become lifelong clients to exceed their sales goals. But most coaches are afraid to market themselves because they've been taught to use cookie-cutter marketing tactics and unethical sales approaches. When in reality, your prospect just wants a real emotional connection and amazing results. Therefore, get ready to unlearn and market yourself authentically through asking insightful questions, making better business decisions, practicing self-acceptance, and doing sales the right way. Everybody, welcome back to another episode on the Critically Conscious Coach. And oh my goodness, I have such an amazing guest for you today. Somebody who I definitely think has been critically conscious before I put it out there. Lissa DeHart is with me today, you guys, a master certified coach. And I'm very excited to have her on. Lissa, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show.
Oh, Ruthie, I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Look, I did not know meeting you on Clubhouse was going to result in this, but we are going to create some wonderful content that everybody needs.
Yes. Magic. It's time to make magic.
Yeah. And seriously, you guys, like, I don't normally start the episode by saying, oh, you should go follow. Like, you really should. You should go follow her. Like I said, master certified coach. And that's a real thing. She's got like a whole alphabet soup after her name. So Lissa, I'm going to just go ahead and turn it over to you. But I can tell y'all already that you're going to want to go follow her and check out her website. She creates amazing content. But Lissa, can you tell us a bit about you and your business and how you got here?
Yeah. So thank you for that question. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think it is like everybody, we sort of stumble into opportunities and then we make something of those opportunities or we don't. And then as a result of that opportunity, it leads to the next opportunity. And really, my journey into coaching started back when I was an art student in my undergraduate degree, where I have a fine art degree. And I was working with a local hotline and answering calls from people who were in crisis. And then I worked with rape crisis as a hospital advocate, and I was going into hospitals. And then that led to me working with a Native American organization where I was going out to Indian country and talking to high school students about how to get scholarships so they could pay for school. And all of this sort of culminated in, I'm not being paid very much to do any of this stuff. I would really like to be paid a more livable wage. And I think, you know, I'll take that art degree and turn it into a master's in social work. So I went and got my master's in social work. And from there, you know, I worked for the state of New Mexico for quite a few years. And then I worked for the military for even more years, working with family issues, as well as running an anger management group and really doing what was, you know, from a therapeutic background is sort of like coach-like, which is solution-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing an anger group and seeing people and working on whatever their issues were. And then I ultimately went into private practice, and I had the luxury of doing this for a couple of reasons.
Yes.
One, my husband was retiring from the military, so we had his retirement coming in and medical insurance, which I think is the biggest hindrance to most small businesses, is that, you know, not having medical insurance, but that's a whole nother conversation we could be having. But having that ability then to start my own practice and be able to do it in a way where I was still working for the military for one of the years. And then I was able to leave the military because I had the 5 or 6 clients that Michael and I had agreed that I needed in order to actually really take the leap. And so I did my own private practice from 2004 to 2013 is when I shut down my therapy practice. And one of the things that had happened in my therapy practice is I had become very well known for doing trauma work. Mm-hmm. So I was working with PTSD, complex trauma, dissociative disorders, and relationship work. And so these things were all very interwoven in my practice, but I had a very successful therapeutic practice.
Yeah.
The problem was I was getting really tired. And Michael had an opportunity for a promotion that took us up to Washington State. And we had been in New Mexico. And frankly, therapy, you can't sell a therapy practice like right. you might a dental practice, right? Because people are like, I'm a little more particular about my therapist than I am about my dentist. As long as I get, you know, good mm-hmm. service at the dentist's office, I'm good with the new dentist. So I had to shut down everything. And that was really one of those kind of, I don't know, come to Jesus moments in my life where I'm like, what am I going to do? And so at that point, I really was like, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and just start over and go back to school and be mm-hmm. something completely different. But I also knew, because I had a year off, basically off, I was doing stuff. But I mean, I had a year to really recognize how burned out I had become, even though I felt I had good boundaries, even though it wasn't manifesting in unhealthy relationships or alcoholism or anything like that. I was just exhausted, honestly. And so then I'm thinking, I don't want to go back to being exhausted. I really want to find a career that leverages what I've already learned, but that also is energizing to me. And that really, I had taken a coach training in 2007 with David Rock's program. At that point, it was called Results Coaching. Now it's the Neuro Leadership Program. And so I'd gotten my initial 60 hours of coach specific mm-hmm. training, but I did have a therapy bias that I already knew all that and I didn't really need it, but my husband wanted to do it. So I was going to be good and like, okay, if you want to do that, I'll join you. But then, you know, sort of fast forward to 2014, I'm like, wow, I did get that coach training in mm-hmm. 2007. And I have been coaching minor, like I had a few coaching specific clients and a lot of the therapy that I had done, especially prior to my private practice, I mean, the majority of my clients were basically fine. And it was really a form of coaching. And I thought, you know, I think I want to explore this a little bit more. And so that began my journey into exploring coaching more deeply and discovering there are a lot more differences than I thought. There was a skill set that I had some of as a therapist, but it was a new skill set. Learning the competencies, understanding the competencies. So I just really began shifting that boat, really my mental boat, right? Because I had this identity as a therapist and I was shifting it into being an identity of a coach. And it was very choppy waters. I will tell you, the building of this business was very uncomfortable for me. I did not feel confident. I went from feeling incredibly confident at the end of 2013, when I was shutting my practice down, to feeling like a baby who didn't even know how to feed herself. It was terrible. I was just like a mess of like, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? What should I be like? Like my head was everywhere. And it was really uncomfortable. And then thankfully, I have a partner who he's just super supportive. And he's like, you did this before when you started your last business. I didn't remember that I had, but apparently I had been through this particular little dance of anxiety time I started a business. He said, you need to just breathe into it. It's going to be fine. Just keep rowing your boat in the direction you want it, you know, start working it towards the direction you want it to go. So I would say it was probably really 2015, because I really didn't work too hard on any of this. I started taking some classes at the end of 2014 on coaching. And in 2015, I really started working on even calling myself a coach. And it was such a weird thing because I had to, like, that was like a new vernacular for me. And it did not feel comfortable. And what does that even mean? And everybody calls themselves a coach. And so there was just all this head stuff I had to navigate as I was creating this new business, which was also redefining my identity of how I saw myself in the world. And so that was really the sort of the origin story of how I led myself into the coaching sphere, I guess.
That's awesome. And I like one of the things that I'm hoping people are taking away from this here, especially when we look at what we're going to talk about next week, is that you have years of professional experience as a therapist, as well as running your own private practice. And then you moved into coaching. So you have such a wide breadth of experience. And for, you know, people who've listened to my podcast more than once, you know, the podcast is invite only, and there's a really good reason for that. And it's so, you know, I can, you know, really be selective about the people that I choose to bring on, because every single person who's been on the podcast, you included, even though we're recording this right now, you all just have such amazing stories and perspectives that I find to be incredibly valuable. I've learned so much from you. Just in our clubhouse rooms, consuming your content, the conversations we've had over the how long have we known each other now? It's like a year, I think, maybe.
year? Yeah. When did Clubhouse start? Because it wasn't right when Clubhouse started, but it was when I first got on Clubhouse that I met you.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, that's like a huge thing. Okay, so again, speaking to that breadth of experience, you serve your clients in more than one way, because your clients, you know, come to you and they look different depending on what they need from you. So can you share the main ways that you help your clients?
Well, I mean, a lot of the work that I do is around coach development and coach education, mentoring, and, you know, so I work primarily with coaches around developmental coaching skills. Part of the reason is because whether you're going through the EMCC, which is the European governing body, or through the International Coaching Federation, in order to be a professional coach, you do have to really demonstrate a capacity to coach at a certain level in order to be at that level. And so if you've taken your 60 hours of coach training, you're going to need to be able to demonstrate at least at an ACC level of coaching in order to get your ACC credential, plus have at least 100 client hours of experience in order to get that credential. Then if you have an ACC, every 3 years, you have to get mentor coaching in order to continue that particular credential. If you decide to move to PCC, you're going to need mentor coaching, and you're going to need to be able to demonstrate the markers, the PCC markers, at a beginning PCC level at a minimum in order to be given that credential of PCC. And you'll need also 500 client hours under your belt at that point at a minimum. If you decide to go on for your MCC through the International Coaching Federation, you need 2,500 plus client hours, 2,500 hours at a minimum. And you also need mentor coaching. You also, all the way along the way, also need coach-specific education. So you have 60 hours for an ACC, 125 coach-specific learning hours for PCC, and 225, I think, for an MCC. So it's almost like a master's program when you think about it like that. That's the way I felt my MCC journey was. I felt like I was getting another master's. And the work that I had to do was very much like the work that was needed in a master's, with less writing, but with more practical application. And so those are the people that I work with, though, who are on that journey of getting towards that sense of comfort and mastery with their coaching. Now, I also want to say this really clearly, because I think there's this sort of idea, especially amongst coaches, oh, if you're an MCC coach, you're like the bomb diggity. And frankly, MCC really stands for mile marker. Like my coaching, like if you heard me coaching in 2018 when I got my MCC versus hearing me coach now, I'm a much better coach today than I was then.
Yeah.
Right. Because I've continued to develop myself. And that's part of why I love working with coaches and doing coach trainings, is because I myself am really required to continue to do the work. And so I really like that.
So this is amazing, because so When I was in the military, I was a language analyst, and we had the inverted pyramid of language mastery. And I have found that this inverted pyramid, you don't have to say language mastery. You could just say the inverted pyramid of mastery or the inverted pyramid of expertise. But we had, it was one, like, or starts at zero, you know, nothing. Zero, zero plus one, one plus two, two plus three, three plus four, and it goes all the way up to five. And to your point just now, my very first score coming out of language school, I was a 2.3. I got a 2 in listening and a 3 in reading. Was that what happened? Nope. I was a 3.2, exact opposite, which was weird to me because I was like, but I love to read, but my reading endurance wasn't good, but that's a whole nother thing. But even getting to 3.3, a 3 on the reading test and a 3 on the listening test, further into my career, continuing to get those 3 scores and even trying to test higher, I realized that my translation ability was just so much better, even though my test scores said 3.3 through those subsequent years. I think it was like a space of like 4 years. I got 3.3 the first time, and we have to test annually. And so I say all that to say that, like, what's required, and it shows in the requirements to go from ACC, PCC to MCC, what's required at that first level, it feels like a lot to you probably at the time because it's all new, but the amount of work you have to do to go from a 0 in language to a 1 is just not that hard. Like, in the grand scheme of things, it's just not that hard. But to go from a 1 to a 2 requires a lot more knowledge because that's what makes inverted. Yeah. And to go from a 2 to a 3, there's just so much more because the base of that pyramid continues to widen. So that's what it made me think of when you said that. And I hope, again, for everyone listening, that you're hearing the requirements of these different levels of certification for coaches. Because in the small business space, the vast majority of people labeling themselves as business coaches are uncertified. In the vast majority of cases, the things that I have paid for, only one, only one I would say has actually been certified, or they're mislabeled and they're not actually a coach. But we'll save that conversation for later.
Save that one for later.
Yeah. But that's something else just to hear. Like, as you're looking around, you're like, oh, I need a business coach or whatever. If this person is calling themselves a coach, you are not remiss in asking them about their certification. And you want to hear that they got a certification. If they are running around using the word coach, the fact that everyone, and I put that in air quotes, is saying that they're a coach, that is not a good thing for marketing purposes, but it's also not a good thing because they are misusing the title.
Well, and I think people really get confused also with the difference between a sports coach who's going to say, like, I was in swimming and I was in horseback riding, so I had coaches, right, you know, through the years. And I mean, I remember, like, swimming, it's like, you need to put your elbow back more. You've got to reach farther. You need to, you know, don't cup your hands so hard. Cup it a little harder than that. Like, whatever it was, you know, more kick, less like movement, more, you know, whatever, like focus on this muscle. And that's what a sports coach does. They're looking at your objectively, whatever that means. They're looking from an outside perspective at a performance that you're doing, which is a tangible performance. And so they can say, you know, you need to, like a golf coach, you need to, you know, hold your hips this direction, swing your shoulders that direction, and then allow the, you know, the club to do the work as it's coming down to hit the ball. I don't play golf, so this is a bad analogy probably for me.
I don't know. It sounded more than what I knew.
But in coaching, in true partnership coaching, I don't need to do that for you. I'm not consulting and telling you how you're going to be successful. I'm in fact really learning how to let go of your, like, how you're going to do it, knowing that there are many ways to be successful, not just one. And so to your point also, you know, that was one of the hardest parts of my business development, was that everybody can call themselves a coach. You know, I took a weekend class. I'm a coach now, and everything's a coach. I'm a health coach. I'm a diet coach. I'm a this coach. I'm a that coach. And I mean, I think I was reading somewhere, and please, I don't know if you've heard of this, and maybe I'm wrong, but there's a woman who's actually being sued because she's called herself a health coach and was giving people dietary advice without a dietitian's credentials. And so people also are really getting themselves into trouble that way. And I have a girlfriend in Budapest in Hungary. And one of the things Hungary has done as a country is you have to go through a university program now in order to be able to call yourself a coach. You have to go through a and this is a person who's been coaching for years, and she still had to go through a university program to get the certification that she could call herself a coach because of all the problems with people calling themselves coaches who are not coaches. And it's part of the reason that, you know, I mean, I think there's a myriad of reasons why therapists or hairstylists or doctors or, you know, CPAs, all of these different professions require state licensure or national licensure, depending if you're an HR specialist and you want a certification. You have to demonstrate that you have the training required to call yourself an HR professional or a cosmetologist or a massage therapist or a, you know, psychological therapist. And honestly, I do believe over time that what we're going to see is that people will not be able to call themselves coaches. At some point, they will have to have a certification of some sort.
I think that's great. Honestly, it's a growing industry. It's growing even further. And the FTC even has a warning on their website about business coaches, to your point. So I would not be disappointed to see that at all, because it helps protect us as the potential clients.
Consumer. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And because if you are a professional coach and you have at least a code of ethics that you are theoretically supposed to be following. Now, this is like anything. There's always bad actors, but you have a code of ethics that you are agreeing to. And there is also a process for a consumer to go and complain to the ICF if a coach does a really bad job with them. I don't know what that would be, but let's just say they were really inappropriate in some way. The client has some form of recourse. Whereas if I, you know, and I'm going to just use myself as an example, if I was a fine arts student and decided I was going to be a coach because I just loved helping people, and I'm helping people at a level that I don't understand what I'm doing and I end up causing harm, there's no recourse for you because I'm not in part of any sort of organization that would hold me accountable to what I'm doing. And at that point, it becomes a legal issue. And now you're having to go to court, which you know, is not cheap, I would imagine. So
not cheap.
not cheap. Lawyers are not cheap.
No. And, you know, just to speak to that point about causing harm, I've been doing interviews with people about their bad coaching experiences, business coaching experiences. And some of these people experienced true harm. Mm-hmm. Like true harm. And I think all of us did in some capacity or another, but the amount of harm that we experienced obviously or would have impacted our time to recover. And most people, myself included, are still kind of untangling and working through what happened, why it happened, how can I keep it from happening again? But there are scars for people. And so it's like, it sounds like, oh, well, it wasn't life coaching, it was business coaching. But these people, they just, anyway.
Well, and I mean, as you say that, the thing that really shows up for me, Ruthie, is, you know, when I was talking about changing direction in my career, I was incredibly emotionally vulnerable at that moment. And so if I'm like thinking, well, here's the first question I have to ask myself. If I'm thinking, I'm going to take this class with this business coach who's going to teach me how to market my business so I can have 10,000K a month or a week, or they're going to send me 300 clients a month and I'm just going to be blowing up all over the place. That scarcity and that fear about not being successful is what's being played on. And so there's a whole psychology to kind of, I hate to say used carsman sales because my dad was a used carsman, but there's sort of this sort of like, let me get you in the door with something free. Oh, now you owe me something. Here's something slightly bigger. Oh, will you sit for this? And then when it doesn't work, because no business is a cookie cutter business unless you get a McDonald's franchise, you know, or something where they lay it all out and they make it all and they've worked on it for, you know, 50 years and they figured
the brand, is developed for you.
People are going to drive up to those golden arches, whether or not you're brand new or not. They know the arches. And so, you know, here you are in this place where this cookie cutter worksheets on how to build your brand and figure out your niche and figure out who your ideal clients are, all of which are useful in and of themselves, not to $2,500 worth of useful. But then when the clients don't just pour in, it isn't because there's something wrong with the fact that the system doesn't work across the board. There's something wrong with you. You're not doing it right enough. You haven't done whatever that is, that magic sauce that you needed to really believe in. And this is where stuff like The Secret comes in. If you believe strongly enough, then it'll just magically show up. And that leaves a lot of people going, I'm clearly not wanting it enough, or I'm not doing it right enough. And I think that is emotionally exhausting as well as scarring. And depending on the level of trauma a person has going into this deal, it can be even worse. So, I mean, business coaching is really business consulting. And honestly, if I were starting out again, and I've taken a few of these because I bought the Kool-Aid and I had my own, you know, I had my anxiety.
You're human, just like the rest of us.
I hate to even tell you how much money I spent to get a logo that I didn't even like and ended up making my own on an iPad. So, I mean, there's wasted money that goes into the deal, which is itself not pleasant. But I would say, don't spend money on that stuff. Most of that stuff you can Google, or get yourself into a group of people who are doing the same thing and share resources. You know, find other people to support you. Because honestly, like, my business does not work on Facebook ads or Instagram ads. And those things are very expensive. Twitter ads, LinkedIn ads. That is not the way a coach typically builds a really strong business, unless what they're doing is selling a product of how to, you know, do this. The way that most coaching businesses that are successful are really built are through relationships. And so if you're going to spend time, what is the saying? Fast, right, or cheap? Pick two. You only get to pick two. So I wanted to do it right. And I wanted to do it cheap. So it was going to take time to do. And so I just spent the time and energy learning how to build my own website, learning how to do a podcast, learning how to do YouTube videos. They're not perfect, not beautiful, but started doing them. Just reaching out to people on LinkedIn and having real conversations, getting to know people like you and I. I mean, we met on Clubhouse, but we met outside of Clubhouse very quickly and started having conversations and just sort of getting to know each other. And that was a big part of it. And it didn't mean like, oh, we're the bestest of friends because we both have busy lives. But, you know, we've been able to come together and then we go off and do our thing and then we come back together. And that relationship was more, I mean, that has been more important than did I buy or sell something to you?
Right.
Or from you.
Okay. So the big question, last question I'd like to ask everybody, especially since you've poured into us so much and you've kind of given us a hint, a peek at just the passion that you have for the work that you do and the things that you believe in. I'd love for you to share with us what your grand vision for your business's impact on the world is.
You know, that is such a large question. And one of my guiding principles has, and it doesn't matter if it's that we bought a house or whatever, I really want to try and leave places better than I found them. I'm not always successful at doing that, but that is my underlying goal. And one of the things that I really recognized is that I do have a unique skill set, as do everybody. And I had an opportunity through training coaches, and I still do have individual clients, but I had an opportunity by training coaches to really take what I had learned and be able to help them find their own way to be able to really listen deeply to people and to be able to support people to have insights and to create sustainable changes through the way that they were able to have conversations. And that then magnified my reach. And so, I mean, that idea of like the ripples that ripple out is really a beautiful metaphor. One person can't fix the world all by themselves. Apparently, maybe one person can break the world all by themselves, but that's a whole different story.
Ripples.
But ripples. But I really wanted to be able to be of service to humanity in a way that people learned the skills of listening and reflecting back in ways that were useful and supporting people to really anchor their own learning, to come up with really big, important goals that they really wanted to work on, and then to be able to have sustainable changes moving forward. And so that is the purpose of my business. And I know I cannot do it all by myself. So I work with larger groups of people as a result of that. Larger groups being, you know, 8 to 10, whatever people, versus just me trying to do it all. Because they can see far more people than I can see all by myself.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think that's beautiful. Like your ripples will have ripples,
yeah,
right? Like you impact people and they impact people. And that's a beautiful thing for sure. This has been an amazing, amazing first episode. So what I'd like to do is let everybody know that in excitement for this episode and what we knew we were going to talk about, Lissa and I actually did a coaching session. She coached me, 30-minute session, and we have the link for that session in the show notes. If you watch it and you're like, man, wow, that's completely different. I've never experienced that before. You haven't experienced an actual coaching session. Like, it was glorious. I'll probably have to do a solo episode to talk about how I felt during that. And then I can reshare the link again for everybody in terms of how that impacted me and how I felt during that session. But we have that link down in the show notes, as well as Lissa's social media handles. And again, I encourage you to follow her, just as somebody who works with coaches and is very clear on the differences. And I'm super excited about next week's episode, because we're going to be talking about the differences between coaching and consulting and coaching and therapy. So you do not want to miss that. I am sure that that's going to quickly become a very popular episode. So I'm really excited for us to publish that. Lissa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I loved this opportunity to learn about Lissa's journey to becoming a coach and then a master certified coach. Her story really helped me see exactly how rigorous coaching training is and the value in working with someone who's certified. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. Thank you so much for joining us today. Lissa and I thought it would be super helpful to show you what a coaching session should look and feel like, so you can watch Lissa coach me as I wrestle with a little bit of imposter syndrome by using the link in the show notes.